Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
FM News Talk 97.1 Podcast. FM News Talk 97.1.
That is exactly what I needed to hear.
Thank God someone here knows what they're talking about.
That's us. That's right. Gotta love this American ride. All
right, you need to take the time and get the full picture.
I love the ladies. I mean, they rev my engine, but they don't belong in the newsroom.
It is Anchor Man, not Anchor Lady.
What do you want from me? I'm not a married sweetheart.
Goodness sake, Beth, keep your voice down. Your father's listening to the radio.
I'm not a married sweetheart.
This is the Annie Fry Show.
Nancy Pelosi saying this is a cruel, cruel approach to this. What's wrong with making people or asking people to work at least 20 hours a week?
Nancy Pelosi would have us believe that this is some kind of an evil, cold-hearted right-wing plot. We first heard about work requirements as part of welfare reform, which, of course, was signed by that very famous fascist president, William Jefferson Clinton. So this is something that goes back to the Clinton era. This is something the New Democrats believed in back in the 1990s. And the basic idea here is if you're going to get government assistance, it's very good to have some additional things to go with it, which is a work requirement that allows some level of dignity, allows you to get the skills that will help you to go back to work, and reduce the incentive for people just to stay home and get checks and possibly cheat the system.
I think it was Maine did this like a year ago, and they said the 20 hours of work or you have to enroll in school because they had those extended welfare benefits from the Great Recession. I think their enrollment went to zero, like overnight.
Oh, yeah,
like, okay,
yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah, I'll go get a job now. Thank you.
That was DeRoy Murdoch commenting on the idea, the concept that maybe if we're going to give welfare out to able-bodied individuals, that we do have a bit of a requirement in order to make sure that they are eligible to receive those types of benefits. So I wanted to ask our dear friend, Stephen Moore, with the Heritage Foundation, their chief economist, that question. Stephen, thanks for coming on the show with us today.
Hi, great to be with you.
So when you listen to DeRoy Murdoch there talking about that type of a work requirement along with welfare benefits, how does that ultimately affect the economy in the long run?
Well, work requirements are not anything new. We had a work requirement that was signed into law built by Bill Clinton back in the 1990s in a Republican Congress, and it was a phenomenal success, actually. We got almost half of the people who were on welfare into the workforce, and they were able... It was the best thing you could do, by the way, for people on welfare is get them into the workforce, get them some skills, get them some job training on the job, and it worked wonderfully. We had a big reduction in the people who were collecting government benefits, and you had a big increase in the number of people who actually were learning skills and saw their income rise over time. And you can't get out of poverty if you're on welfare, right? I mean, mm-hmm. So you want to get people, and it's the best thing you can do for both the public treasury, but also for the people who are stuck in the cycle of welfare and don't have any purpose in their life. I mean, nobody wants to sit on the couch and do nothing, it's not even controversial. It's one thing to have a work, to be opposed to a work requirement when you've got a 12% unemployment rate and there are no jobs. But today in America, at almost all states, there's a surplus of jobs, not a shortage of jobs. So mm-hmm. I think it's a no-brainer. I think we should do it for people who collect food stamps, but people who get public housing, many of the people who get Medicaid. And incidentally, even people, who are disabled, we obviously care about people who are disabled. But just because you're disabled doesn't mean you can't work, So we should, for people who are capable of working, we should definitely put in place these work requirements.
We're speaking with Stephen Moore, the chief economist at Heritage Foundation. You talked about, that word poverty there. We hear poverty a lot in campaign seasons. I guess we're in 2020 campaign season now. I don't feel like we're ever not in campaign season anymore. But you hear a lot of politicians, especially on the left, trying to focus on the little guy and making a lot of promises to be on their side of the issue. Although campaign after campaign after campaign, we hear the same promises. These individuals get elected and nothing changes. What is it about President Trump's economy and his approach to economics that you think does actually address people who have maybe been impoverished before but now have the opportunity to not be?
Well, he puts American workers first, and he puts American businesses first, and that's the first president in a long time who's done that. It's not racist to put America first. It's what every president should do is make sure that the, you know, policies we put in place in Washington benefit American families and workers and businesses. And, you know, you just see the lift in the economy over the last 2 years. Everyone can see it. You see a new optimism. You see, today we have 7 million more jobs than people to fill them. Can you believe that? 7
yeah.
million more jobs. That's never happened before in American history. We have the lowest unemployment rate for women, blacks, and Hispanics in, you know, at least 50 years. These are phenomenal, records of accomplishment. I saw the president a couple weeks ago, and I was just joking with him. I said, you know, this is working better than when we put it together. You know, when I worked with Laffer and Larry Kudlow, we put together what we call Trumponomics and the plan, and I knew it would work, but I didn't think it would work this quickly and this powerfully, but boy, has it. And, you know, the Democrats are running. You notice they don't talk about the economy anymore because the economy is so strong.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. You are the author of a book, Trumponomics: Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. A really good read, especially if you're looking to understand what the president is trying to do, has successfully done so far. I haven't had the opportunity to speak to you since his budget came out. He's got a lot of cuts involved in this budget. And I've been saying for a long time, we can't just be tax reform conservatives. We have to be spending reform conservatives as well. What do you feel about those proposals in the budget when it comes to cutting?
It still spends too much money. You know, we're spending way too much money in Washington, so I think we need to cut, you know, expenditures more than this one does. But this does cut $2.5 trillion out of the budget, so it's a good start. I wish Trump would take, you know, would cut, you know, programs and the increases in spending even more. I mean, by the way, we'll still be spending more money under this budget. You know, liberals say, oh, it takes a hack to the budget. No, it doesn't. Well, and we'll still be spending over $4 trillion a year out of Washington. So, but you know, the tax cuts are creating growth, and that's a positive because it means more tax revenues. And incidentally, last year in 2018, the federal government collected more tax revenues than any time before in American history, and that's with the tax cut in place. So we don't have a revenue problem in Washington. We have an overspending problem.
Yeah, certainly is definitely a very large portion of what we need to do to be fiscally responsible in the United States. So my question to you is, in your experience working with the president when it comes to economics, how dedicated is he to the idea of spending cuts? Because that's a really hard thing to get through politically. Everybody, you know, as soon as you say you're going to cut something, then everyone else says that, you know, there's a portion of people who are going to die if these cuts happen. So it's a hard conversation to have. Is he dedicated to addressing our national debt?
Oh, so look, you know, the problem is that nobody in Washington wants to cut spending.
Yeah.
you know, very few. I mean, Donald Trump wants to, but Republicans and Democrats, you know, when I first came to town, we had a $2 trillion national debt. That was in the early 1980s. Today, we have a $22 trillion national debt. So our national debt has gone up tenfold in 35 years or so. And it happens under Republican administrations, Democratic administrations, Republican Congresses, Democratic Congresses. You know, you need somebody to take the leadership here. I wish Trump were, you know, tighter on the budget. And he told me he wished he'd vetoed some of these spending bills. And I hope he does that, because now Pelosi, you see, they have a bill they want to, you know, increase Social Security payments. I mean, Social Security is going broke, and they want to increase the expenditures on the program.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really a frightening, you know, outlook that these liberals have. And you know, I can't think of a single program Democrats want to cut except for the building the wall and national security.
Yeah, for sure. The balance there between the two parties is quite off. Andrew Yang is somebody who is running for president on the Democratic side. And there's a clip here. I want you to listen to this. And I just want to get your initial reaction. The first person I thought of when I heard this was you and how you would hear this. So this is Andrew Yang, a Democratic candidate for president.
Running the government like a business is nonsense. They're two very different things.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that the government can learn from business is that businesses don't treat their customers like crap. And our government treats us like crap come tax day. We're giving the government hundreds of billions of dollars, and do we ever get like any kind of like celebration of that fact. I mean, if we were customers, people would be like, oh my gosh, you gave us like hundreds of billions of dollars. So I would make tax day into a national holiday. I would call it revenue day. I would have it so that AI tries to pre-fill out your taxes for you. So if you have very simple taxes that are based upon the same info, it just gets spit out for you. And then you'd get a video showing where your money's going, you know, government employees thanking you.
So Andrew Yang there, he's not interested in lowering taxes. He just thinks that after we pay taxes, that it would be a lot better if they told us thank you. I mean, this is from the Democratic candidate for president, Andrew Yang. What's your thoughts when you hear that?
I'm not really sure I really even understood what he was talking about there. I mean, was he saying he wants to reduce people's taxes?
No, he wants to turn tax day into a federal holiday. And then the one thing that he says towards the end that I didn't get
I don't even get the logic of that. Why? You mean April 15th would be a federal holiday?
Yeah, so that people could celelebrate paying their taxes. I mean, it's like this idea of this Democratic candidate.
That's a pretty backwards day.
Yeah.
I mean, April 15th is the worst day of the year.
Exactly.
Congressman, not the best day of the year. And, you know, Americans, you know, quite rightly think that they pay way, way too much in taxes. And so, you know, we should be able to cut our... Look, most Americans understand about 25 to 30 cents of every dollar Washington spends is wasted. So why is it that we can't get the budget down to $3 trillion from $4 trillion? And, you know, just have them cut out the waste, cut some of the bureaucrats. We know, you know, even in the Pentagon, I live a few miles from the Pentagon, it's a big bureaucracy. I mean, we need to reduce the federal workforce, reduce the power of the federal government, reduce the, you know, we have 49 different job training programs, 28 different special ed programs. We've got programs that date back to World War I that we're still spending money on. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, Trump has to go through that budget, you know, tougher and find all the things. I would urge your listeners to go to a website called openthebooks.com and just look at how the federal government is spending your dollars, folks, and see how there's tens and tens and tens of billions of dollars of waste, and nobody does anything about it. I work with the folks at Open the Books. We've exposed all the fraud and the waste. That the federal government's own auditing agency says that there's $148 billion, not million, $148 billion of wrongful, erroneous, or fraudulent payments by programs like Medicare, food stamps, Medicaid, Social Security. You got, you know, there's like thousands and thousands of people over the age of 105 that are getting Social Security checks, and most of them are dead.
Oh my, yeah. Open the Books is a really great website. I second that notion there as well. People need to go to Amazon and check out Trumponomics: Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy. Authored by Stephen Moore. So it's great to have you on here. I'm looking forward to seeing what the response is to the president's budget when they start actually getting into that and counter proposing. But the economy, just like you said, they don't talk about it right now because it's too good.
So good. Yep.
Thank you, Stephen
Moore.
All right,
have a great week.
Appreciate it. You too.
Take care.
Yep. The chief economist for the Heritage Foundation. Always great to speak with him here on the Andy Frey Show. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Judge Napolitano is going to join us. I'm going to ask him to kind of lay out for us, what is the legal trouble surrounding this entire college admissions scandal scenario? There's a lot of people involved in this. Who is all looking at lawyering up and facing some legal troubles? I'd love to know what Judge Knapp has to say about that. I'm also going to ask him regarding the Mueller report. When or if the Mueller report comes out ever or soon, what happens next? Does that mean that President Trump is, you know, in a heap of trouble if something comes out in that immediately? What's the process? How much does politics play into the potential of an impeachment trial? What does he expect to happen once that Mueller report is revealed, and does he think it will be revealed? I'm going to ask Judge Napolitano that as soon as we come back right here at 125. So don't go anywhere. More Annie Frye Show headed your way.
You're listening to the Annie Frye Show.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. 47!
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Great to speak with Heritage Foundation's chief economist, Stephen Moore. There, go check out his book, Trumponomics, on Amazon. And he's just a really good insight when it comes to anything economics. Has a great relationship with the president. So it's interesting to listen to him react to this budget and even to criticize the president on not doing enough to get our spending in line. So check him out, Stephen Moore, Trumponomics, Inside the America First Plan to Revive Our Economy, who we just spoke to. Also at 971talk.com/Annie to catch the replay. Very privileged and honored to speak to our next guest here, Andrew Napolitano. Judge Napolitano, great to talk to you again.
Annie, back to be with you, my friend.
Senior judicial analyst for Fox News, always also interested in your insight on a lot of the issues that are facing us right now. I'm really curious about this academic admissions scandal and seeing the legal trouble that is swarming. I think it seems bigger than maybe simple-minded people like myself know. Who is all facing, who's all lawyering up right now in the wake of this Operation Varsity Blues?
Well, I've never known you to be simple-minded. Nevertheless, shortly after he pleaded guilty to being the center of this conspiracy. And picture this conspiracy as a bicycle tire.
Mm-hmm.
So there's one or two people right at the hub, and then the spokes are going out from there. At the end of the spokes, the folks don't know each other, but they're all connected through the person in the middle. He told government lawyers, after he pleaded guilty to helping 32 students get in, that he actually helped 750.
Wow.
And I would think that if you're one of the parents who's been indicted, and there's really no defense to this, I mean, you didn't think you were going to get caught, you thought you were doing the right thing, you love your child, you'd make any sacrifice for them. These are human reactions, but they're not legal defenses. You would probably dispatch your lawyer to go to the feds who just indicted you and said, go easy on me and I'll give you 10 friends who I know did this as well. They were part of another conspiracy.
Oof.
So I think that's where we're going. I think you're going to see prosecutors soon announce large numbers of people caught up in other conspiracies involving other colleges. And then you'll see sort of the moral debate. I mean, if you give $2 million to put your name on a building and your child is unqualified, but they admit that child because you gave the $2 million, isn't that also a form of bribery? The answer is yes.
Yeah.
One is legal and one's criminal.
Yeah.
Putting your name on the building for $2 million, and I'm just making up the number. Obviously, the number is different depending upon the size of the building and what school it is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That procedure is as old as universities themselves. But the idea of using a test taker, of actually changing scores on tests, of actually photoshopping and doctoring photographs to make unathletic students with no high school athletic record seem like, in this case, tennis and rowing superstars, that we've really never heard of before. So the short answer to the long answer to your question is what I've just given you. The short answer is this is the tip of the iceberg, Annie.
Yeah, we're speaking with senior judicial analyst for Fox News, Judge Napolitano. Is there anything that you've heard so far in the wake of this information being out for about almost a week now? Is there anything you've heard that could suggest that any of these parents didn't know what they were doing was illegal?
Yes. And that has not come out yet.
Okay.
But I do believe that some who can't afford to plead guilty, I don't mean financially can't afford, but the consequence, the loss of a professional license, the loss of professional work, attendance upon a guilty plea would be catastrophic to them,
mm-hmm.
will offer the defense that they believed they were making bona fide, legitimate donations, and for that reason they actually... This, of course, has complicated their woes. Took IRS deductions on the donation. I mean, nobody in their right mind takes an IRS deduction on a bribe unless you really and truly don't think it is a bribe, and though naive, you really and truly think it's going to the school.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly how these defenses are going to play out, but we are hearing that, as I said, some who can't plead guilty you know, chair of a corporation, a publicly held corporation, the SEC would bar the person from being a chair if they pleaded guilty, are willing to take their shots with a jury with a defense like that.
Judge Knapp,
that'd be very a very interesting defense to offer, and that would basically be, "Are you kidding me?"
Yeah,
type of a defense.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you? What about the schools involved? Are they in trouble?
You know, it's very interesting, and this is unusual for the feds because the feds like to indict everybody having anything to do with any kind of a conspiracy, and they didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They did not indict the schools as institutions. They did indict some coaches and. Administrators who actually were bribed, had cash put in their pockets, and they did not indict the students. Now, this is a very serious issue with the students. This has been going on for a while. Some of these students have graduated
yeah.
and then have graduated from grad and professional schools. So you have doctors and lawyers out there whose academic careers were commenced because of this bribery. They were stellar students. Should they be punished? The one school that has spoken on this is it's either Wake Forest or USC, University mm-hmm. of Southern California.
Yeah, I think it was USC.
Basically said, we're going to evaluate the students on a case-by-case basis. If a student got here under some fraudulent means but has done well, we're not throwing that student out, nor are we going to say who it is. Although, it would be easy to figure out who it is because the parents have been indicted and those names have been made public.
Yeah, it is such a messy situation. And like you suggested, likely just the tip of the iceberg that this would grow and grow over the course of time. So we're going to continue to watch that. I wanted to ask you while I have you here about the Mueller report. We know we hear murmurs, and we have for quite some time, that it is suspected to come out soon, which is a very subjective amount of time, I suppose. Can you lay out what, because I don't know that everybody understands exactly what the Mueller report means as far as the process. The Mueller report isn't going to put President Trump in jail. It's not going to completely vindicate him of everything. It's a step in the process that could lead to impeachment, but could lead to nothing. Once that Mueller report is revealed in whatever amount it is revealed to the American public, what's the legal process that follows?
The first process is for the report to go to the Attorney General of the United States. The reason that's necessary is because there probably will be materials in there that the law does not permit to be revealed, no matter what Congress or the American public wants. As an example, testimony before a grand jury about a person who is not indicted is forever kept secret. The theory being, if the person was not indicted, then they shouldn't be tarnished just because prosecutors brought that testimony in. So prosecutors cannot reveal that, and the Attorney General knows that.
Mm-hmm.
Names and methods of undercover agents, the use of classified materials, these can't be top secret materials. These can't be revealed, whether the Attorney General or the public wants them revealed or not. So the first step is a sophisticated legal analysis of what can't be revealed. The rest, you know, I don't know what's going to be in there. When Ken Starr, who, by the way, is on my show, Liberty File, tomorrow on Fox Nation.
Okay.
When Ken Starr went through this, the procedure was to send it directly to the House of Representatives. It did not have to go to the Attorney General. And at the time he sent it to the House of Representatives, he dispatched his PR person to say, we have found impeachable offenses, and we're sending it to the House of Representatives recommending impeachment. It could be something of that magnitude. It could be, we found indictable offenses, and we're recommending indictment, but we don't want to do it because he's the sitting president. Or it could be, you know, we found some bank fraud, which had nothing to do with his being a president, or we found nothing. We've searched and scoured everything. I don't believe that that's how this will end up, but it could be anything from one extreme. Here are impeachable and indictable offenses to the other extreme. Here's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
In my view, it's going to be several reports. The documents will be very complex and extremely voluminous, far too much for any one person to go through, and you'll get you get a variety of opinions as to how significant they are.
So then once the House of Representatives is able to view this information, they will make a decision on whether to move forward with an impeachment trial. How much does how much do politics play into even if what we look at here in this report is like, wow, this is really bad. The decision for the political House of Representatives to move forward with those trials, is politics a big part of that?
Yes. Yes. And some Democrats who really dislike the president and believe that he's committed crimes or impeachable offenses, like Mrs. Pelosi and Congressman Nadler, who's chair of the House Judiciary Committee, and Congressman Adam Schiff, who's chair of the House Intelligence Committee, have said impeachment is a non-starter unless it is bipartisan and there's a great groundswell of support for it in the country, as there was at the time for Nixon, as there was not. Republicans misjudged this at the time for Bill Clinton. But these people, Nadler, Schiff, Pelosi, recognize the pushback that will come to them if there is not widespread public support. So one theory is, let the voters decide. If there's dirty laundry about the president that the special counsel uncovered, put it out there and let the voters in 2020 decide. Others in the House will say, we have constituencies who don't want this guy in office anymore because they believe this dirty laundry is disqualifying as president. And if it had been known in 2016, he would never have been elected. We want to start the impeachment proceedings now, whether there's support for it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to go the latter way, because the Republicans suffered exquisitely after they misfired at Clinton. And I think the Democrats have learned from that lesson.
Last question for you, Judge. Is there a statute of limitations at all on this information? Could they wait till after 2020 and then engage in these proceedings?
Well, it's funny. The New Jersey state constitution permits impeachment after you leave office.
Mm.
It's crazy, but it does. The federal constitution does not. But if the issue is the statute of limitations on crime, that's a very, very serious issue. There are three opinions on whether or not a sitting president can be indicted. Two say no. One says yes. They're all modern, up-to-date opinions that came out during the Ken Starr investigation of Bill Clinton. But all three say if the statute of limitations is about to expire, you need to do something, like get the president to agree to waive the statute of limitations, or if he won't, indict him in secret. Don't reveal the existence of the indictment until he leaves office. Why might you do that? Because most of these crimes have a 5-year statute of limitations. Meaning, if they were committed at the beginning of the first term, they could not be prosecuted at the completion of the second term.
Yeah, well, you know, one thing's for sure, your opinion is going to continue to be highly sought after about all of these issues in the coming weeks and months. And we always appreciate you giving us some time here on the Annie Fry Show to pick your brain on these issues.
Always a pleasure, Annie. Until the next time. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That's Judge Andrew Napolitano, Chief analyst for all legal issues there on this Fox News channel. My mind is blown by that. The thought that all the different scenarios, once we get the Mueller report, there's no like, this happens, and this happens. With every scenario that happens, there's like a dozen different ways that could go, and then that spawns a dozen different ways for the next step and the next step. So it's really hard to predict what's going to happen there. Always great to have the judge on the show. Very grateful that he came on with us today. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to get you your phone calls. 314-241-9797. 314-241-9797. When the Mueller report comes out, what do you expect to happen? Do you think that these Democrats, you know, Nancy Pelosi, who from what I hear is in town, maybe she's listening. Do you think that Speaker Pelosi is going to move to impeach the president? Do you think that's something she secretly wants to do, even though she said, not secretly, it's pretty obvious. or do you think that they're going to calculate the politics about it and say, we're going to let this, as Judge Napolitano said, dirty laundry linger out there and weigh in on it in 2020? It's interesting. Interesting to think about. 314-241-9797. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Annie Fry Show.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to the Annie Fry Show. Katie, did you celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
Oh, you already know it.
Somebody
yes,
has to.
I loved it.
St. Patrick's Day is one of those things where I look at it, I'm like, the people look like they're having so much fun.
But I'm having a good time staying
yeah.
home.
Yeah, it was a good weekend. My two oldest each had sleepovers at friends' house.
Oh, that's great.
And so we had the two-year-old at home, but that was kind of like a, is this possible? I mean, they're neither one of them are 10 yet, so third grade and first grade.
That's crazy to think of that.
I can't imagine, like, the cost to go out, not financially, but the time
but
and the effort.
Too.
Well, yeah. I mean, to go out and be outside in the cold, I'm not a big beer drinker.
Yeah.
So I just think I'm happy for all of the people who are happy doing it.
Totally.
What'd you do?
It's definitely up my personality lane.
Yeah, sure.
So I went to the parade downtown. It was actually, it wasn't on Olive. It was more towards Union Station.
Mm-hmm.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was so great. Everybody was serving green beer, which I love.
Does that make your tongue green?
And my teeth were green. My tongue was green. By the end of it, it just was horrible. It looked like I ate some kind of alien.
Well, when you're not the only one, that's fine.
Yes, I had a really good time. My husband, unfortunately, couldn't make it because he had work. So we
what
had
a responsible husband.
I know. And I'm like,
Mr.
Well,
Fitzpatrick.
We're the Fitzpatricks. We got to celebrate.
The Fitz Baileys.
The Fitz Baileys.
The Bailey Fitzpatrick wing. That's like, doesn't even sound real.
It's made up.
Yeah. We used to have a place in Edwardsville called Shenanigans, which was a great restaurant. And I think that you kind of have to have a moment of silence for Shenanigans. I wish they'd come back. The restaurant, the building where it was in, is vacant again. But that's kind of the Irish hub of the mm-hmm. East Side for me when I was growing up. But it's such a fun thing to see.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just in general, people just look happy. Is St. Patrick's Day, like, you ever go to Dogtown?
Oh, yeah. I went last year to Dogtown.
That's supposed to be crazy.
Oh, my gosh. It's crazy. And it's so fun. I just really like anything that has people from St. Louis and the city out supporting local businesses mm-hmm. and getting crazy and having a good time. I mean, not like irrational mm-hmm. and getting in fights. But if you can go out and support amazing towns like Dogtown or come down here and support local businesses in downtown St. Louis, I am all for it.
I saw some posts on that people who were celebrating in Dogtown. One of our good friends and a salesperson here, Erica, that she has a mm-hmm. Sweet M's coffee shop down there,
cool.
which I would encourage you to go check out because it's adorable and delicious. But just like seeing places like that have an opportunity to thrive off of a celebration, totally cool.
Mm-hmm.
Buy local.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to do that a lot more these days than I have in the past because I think
Same.
It's important. And honestly, Trump has been a supporter of that, you know, trying to get people to produce here. And part of that is buying here. And, you know, when you look at the president going to make deals with China and trying to make sure that we are having good deals made and holding up our end of the bargain, when we can buy American, that helps. That's a cyclical thing. It helps
yes.
the economy. It helps put food on somebody's table, keeps the money here. So we were talking with Judge Napolitano just this last segment, 971talk.com/Annie. We'll have that interview up soon. And you can also subscribe to our podcast at radio.com. Also, we always post those there as well. I was talking to him a little bit about the college admission scandal. And did you see, I printed this out and you handed it to me. Did you see this article about William H. Macy's best advice?
I didn't get to read all of it.
The headline is William H. Macy's best advice before Felicity Huffman's arrest in alleged college admission scam resurfaces. So William H. Macy, we all know him. He's on a Netflix series called Shameless, but he's been on a lot of things, including Wild Hogs, which mm-hmm. is a really underrated, great Saturday morning you come in the middle of it and it makes you laugh every time. But William H. Macy, married to Felicity Huffman, she's the one from Desperate Housewives, was asked these questions. What's the interview with it? And they've resurfaced these answers and now they're kind of like using it as a way to put a spotlight on how awful Felicity Huffman is. It was in Men's Journal. Here are some of the questions. He was asked to share the best advice he was ever received. This is what he said. Never lie. It's the cheapest way to go. Mm-hmm. Lies cost you a lot, and they're never worth what they cost. That's true. Mm. He also said that the success that he has enjoyed, he is married to Felicity Huffman, has been for 2 decades, which is a long time in Hollywood relationships. This is what he said about how he's been able to keep that 20-year marriage going. He said it has to do with communication. He says, sooner or later, you're going to have to talk about it. My wife likes to talk, but I'm not a fan of talking because talking leads to communication. And from there, it's a slippery slope to feelings. And then the next thing you know, you're living in your life. Nobody wants that. Ha ha. Jokingly. But he said he was asked to describe the human qualities that he despises the most. He said dishonesty, self-delusion, lack of character. So these are all things that William H. Macy said that, in my opinion, if you're just reading an article that a celebrity said, you're like, yeah, those are great answers. Mm-hmm. And to commend him for having a marriage that lasted 20 plus years in Hollywood, that's a very good thing. I mean, I know, like, I'm talking to thousands of people who have successful marriages that are more than 20 years. But in Hollywood, for whatever reason, that just doesn't happen very often. You know, my question is, do we need to crucify Felicity Huffman even more for making a really bad decision because of something William H. Macy said in a Men's Journal magazine a while ago? This is where we start to kind of do that pile-on thing. Felicity, do you think Felicity Huffman right now would take everything back if she could? Do you think that, like, she's been given this big dose of perspective, like, this wasn't all worth it? And do you think that when Felicity Huffman is thinking about her relationship with her child, I don't know if it was a son or a daughter, probably, I think it was a daughter. I know that Lori Loughlin's were daughters. When you look at, or when I put myself into that position and I'm thinking about if I was doing this stuff either blindly because I love my child so much and I have access to everything because I'm a celebrity, why not do this? What if everybody else is doing it? And Felicity Huffman is the one that didn't outrun the cops at the party while she was underage drinking, to put an analogy to it. What if she's the one who got caught and she knows all these other people who have done this and it's what people do? Does that excuse her from the wrongdoing? Absolutely not. But in today's day and age, how much do we have to crucify these individuals in the court of public opinion when we know that the actual court is going to take care of it enough?
Mm-hmm.
When I look at Felicity Huffman and I look at Lori Loughlin, I see privilege, not white privilege, not male privilege. You know, when you consider their husbands being involved or potentially being involved in this, I see privilege. These people are wildly successful celebrities out of Hollywood. They're very good at what they do. They get paid well for what they do. You'll notice that when you see leftists criticizing people who make a lot of money, who own businesses, or who are wildly successful, they try to criticize these individuals for equating the amount of money they have with what kind of individual they are. But we never do that. We never see the leftists in Hollywood land or in celebrity land criticizing actors and actresses about it. Nope. Their money, their wealth has nothing to do with their virtue.
Mm-hmm.
Not in Hollywood. There's some magical potion that these people are able to consume that keeps them immune to everything that no-name business people are going to be guilty of. You know what this admission scandal, this controversy people are trying to utilize it as a way to address wealth privilege in our country. What Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin and all those other people whose names we don't know because we don't recognize them, what they did was illegal. It's not the amount of money that they spent on something that they tried to do to illegally provide a better opportunity for their kids and unlawfully try to aid a situation for their children. There is a huge difference, between trying to manipulate a system in an illegal way to gain an advantage over people who don't have access to that wealth, as there is using wealth that you have and that you have earned, whether you earned it because you pretended to be somebody in a movie or because you employ thousands of people and have a really good product. And you have access to wealth that way, and you do something that is above board that provides some sort of opportunity for your kid. The legal issue in this situation is not something that can be set aside in the discussion. And when it comes to addressing the difference that we have in wealth from one person to the other, when somebody who has made success because of their profession, because they have applied themselves to something and become wealthy because of it. And yes, being able to hit a 98 mile an hour fastball 400 yards feet out of the park. Feet, not yards. If you can hit 400 yards, I mean, you can make a lot of money. being able to do that is valuable. You know why? Because thousands of people pay lots of money to sit in a stadium and watch you do that. And they buy $9 beers and buy $8 hot dogs and they buy $100 jerseys because of that. It is a valuable thing. Being wealthy because you're good at something is not bad in America. Using a system against itself, shirking the system, participating in illegal behavior because you have enough money to do it, that's wrong. And there's a huge difference because of it. Rich people spending their money legally however they want to, none of your business, none of my business. Rich people using the system against itself, illegal, wrong, don't do it.
Get more at 971talk.com.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.